Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Arya Irani, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is U.S.-Portugal Relations. Today's guest is His Excellency Nuno Brito. Nuno Felipe Alves Salvador e Brito became Ambassador of Portugal to the United States February 23, 2011. From 2005 until his appointment, his posts included Director General for European Affairs at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Co-Chair of the Luso-Spanish Commission for Transborder Cooperation, Counselor of the Portuguese Economic and Social Council, Political Director at Portugal's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and Co-Chair of the U.S.-Portuguese Standing Bilateral Commission. Past experience also includes service in the cabinet of the Minister of Foreign Affairs in 1993, Chief of the Cabinet of the Secretary of Defense in 1995, Deputy Permanent Representative of Portugal at the United Nations 1999, and Principal Diplomatic Advisor for the Prime Minister 2005. Upon presenting his credentials to President Obama, Brito said he would work toward deepening bilateral relations between the two countries in the fields of science, technology, and energy. He also addressed political and military ties. He has said, "Portugal and the United States of America can do more bilaterally. We already have a very strong political, military, and security cooperation based upon the current agreement on cooperation and defense. The brave troops of our countries have served together in several theaters of operations." Brito joined Portugal's diplomatic service in March 1984. He previously served at the Portuguese embassy in Washington, D.C. in 1987. He attained a law degree from University of Lisbon, and Brito was born in Angola on August 5th, 1959. He is married and has two children. Please join me in welcoming His Excellency Nuno Brito.
Well, thank you very much for your presentation. I think that it covers everything. And that means that I'm becoming old, I mean, with all those titles. Well, but thank you so much for the invitation, and I'm very pleased to be here. You may know that I was invited to come to the state of Utah, basically to know you, but also to make my country better known in this state. It happens that I've learned a lot about you, and let me say that I'm impressed with the number of Portuguese speakers in this state. It's really amazing. And they speak with a Portuguese accent many times, and also with a Brazilian accent, but that's good enough. Because Brazil is our brother country and also the largest Portuguese-speaking country in the world. And I would say a few words about Portugal, because I like to take questions more than to make speeches. You said that you teach practical politics here at this school, so I may become one of your students one of these days. But as a foreign service officer, let me tell you how we Portuguese see ourselves nowadays. I mean, if you look at Portugal, you can have two different sets of pictures. I mean, on one hand, you can look at what's going on in Europe. You can look at what the newspapers have been saying about the financial situation of Europe. You can look at ideas that are usually not very positive about Europe in general and its member states in particular. Well, I'd rather say that that's not where probably I would invite you to focus on, because if you look at Portugal, I mean, we are a very modern country. We have been around for 900 years, And since you said rightfully that I'm here to talk about U.S.-Portuguese relations also, I have to inform, to report that we were the second country to have recognized the independence of your country. And we were last week celebrating the 81st birthday of George Washington at Mount Vernon, because your independence was toasted with Madeira wine from Portugal. So strong connections from the beginning. But nowadays, we are a very modern country, a stable democracy. We are a founding member. If you look at the pillars of our foreign policy, basically they are three. On one hand, our starting point is Europe, of course, because we are a member of the European Union. We are part of all the deepest processes of integration of the European Union. As you know, there are different approaches to the Union from different member states. And, of course, we are part of the common currency, the freedom of circulation of people and of goods, of services. So Portugal is always in the forward of all the movements towards deeper European integration. It's embedded in our DNA. And part of this has to do with the fact that we were away from Europe for a long period of time. Only in 1974 we left our links, politically speaking, with Africa. 10 years ago with Macau, it was the last territory administered by Portugal outside Portugal, in China. And And we got back our democracy also just in 1974. It had been interrupted by a totalitarian regime for about 48 years. So all in all, I think that we have been doing a very good job because as a European Union member state, for instance, the president of one of the main institutions of the European Union is a Portuguese citizen, Mr. Barroso. And also, the vice president of the European Central Bank is also another Portuguese citizen. So we are able to be there, to be active partners, and also to promote the relationship between the European Union and the United States of America. We believe that you are pivoting to Asia. That's okay. We started that process 450 years ago when we first arrived to Japan. And we are pivoting with you. But the point is that what remains, what should remain, is at the cornerstone of our politics is the relationship between the United States and Europe. Because by far, we are the best, the largest trading partners, the largest investors reciprocally, and I think that we share a number of values and principles in the way we organize our societies that are quite unique, and we should treasure them. Also, from a defense point of view, if you look at Portugal, we are a founding member of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and as you said, we have been with the U.S. forces in many theaters of operations, including currently in Afghanistan. We are also in Kosovo, and we try to play a role in peacekeeping operations all over the world as we can. On the economic side, one of the reasons why we have accepted this kind invitation to come to Utah was also to try to promote a better understanding of what we do in the economic front and how we can cooperate more. Of course, at a larger scale, there is now the beginning of a negotiation of an agreement between the European Union and the United States, a free trade and investment agreement. That's very important because it will create jobs in the United States, it will create jobs in Portugal, and it will create jobs in Europe. And creating jobs is now key for our future generations. So, second pillar, I would say, is the Atlantic as a whole. We look at the United States, but we look also to Brazil, for instance, and to Angola on the other side of the Atlantic. And because we have very strong ties with the Portuguese-speaking countries in the world, generally speaking. We have Mozambique in the Indian Ocean, and in the Far East, also East Timor. So these Portuguese-speaking countries, probably you are not aware of that, have organized themselves in a group, which is the community of the Portuguese-speaking countries, which is pretty active in international fora, and in particular in the United Nations. And we are also investing intensively in this area. Portugal is a very interesting country in so many ways. Very modern, for instance, in energy. 10 years ago, we were producing very little renewables, and nowadays, about in good years, 42% of the energy that we produce comes from renewables, in particular wind power, solar power, and hydropower, and biomass also some of it. Of course, I don't know if you like surf, but probably you like skiing more in this place. But if you saw in newspapers that big wave off the Portuguese coast, 100 feet tall, yes. Well, I have not ridden one of those waves myself, but I can tell you that we are even researching wave energy in Portugal, because we don't have that kind of wave every day, but we have strong power in there installed. Also, because we started later than others in some fields, we have been able to develop, for instance, online banking in a way that other countries are not able to do. We have been able to develop our e-government in a way that is probably one of the most advanced now in place in the European Union. And yesterday, my colleague, Bovista Marques, from our trade office in New York, was pointing to the fact that for the first time we are exporting more more technology goods, high technology goods than before. And for the first time since 1943, we were able to have a balanced budget, a balanced trade balance this year, which is quite something. Bearing in mind the overall global situation from a trade and an economic point of view. So I'm giving you the rosy picture of Portugal, of course, but what's the flip side of the coin? Well, of course, we have some problems. We are facing them. We have a problem with our debt, and public debt, I mean, and private debt. And also, we had a problem when the financial markets crisis started in 2008. Some countries in Europe were hit, all of them, I mean, one way or the other. And since we belong to the same currency, we have to act together. Now, you may say, well, you have not been acting fast enough. That's a question that in the United States I get quite often. And I keep saying, well, we are not a federal state. And Europe, I mean. And we have different governments which are accountable in their own constituencies. And so every time that we reach to an agreement to improve something, we have to go door to door, strictly speaking, and get their support. And the same applies to what we are doing with the currency in the euro area, in the eurozone. And I think that last year there were some doomsday scenarios about the eurozone. I don't think that they are there now. You just have to look at how strong that exchange rate is, even if in the last few days it went down by 1% if compared to the US dollar. It's still very strong. And you have to look at what we have done through the European institutions to strengthen that currency. In Portugal, nationally speaking, we have been able to bring a deficit in our public spending, which was about 9% plus of our GDP, to 4.5% last year. It's going to be around 5% this year. And we expect to be in a stable situation by 2014, 2015, because as probably some of you who study Portuguese are aware, we are in a program, an economic adjustment program with the European Central Bank, with the European Commission, and with the IMF. And we want to move on and to go back to the markets as soon as possible. So this is where we are from a Portuguese perspective. Of course, the unemployment rate in Portugal now is too high for what we are used to, and that's a top priority for the Portuguese government and the Portuguese institutions to ensure that we reform our economy in order to get sustainable growth in the near future. And that's what we are doing. It will take some time, we know that, but our people has been very resilient and very brave in the way they have been facing these headwinds. So, going back to the United States, I mean, we don't have any major differences with the United States of America. I mean, we Portuguese. Every time that there is a poll in Europe, and I think that the German Marshall Fund conducts polls from time to time every year, and, well, it shows that Portugal is among the countries in which there is the strongest support for the relationship with the United States. We have, I believe, never fought against each other, so our past is quite peaceful. As a matter of fact, our Navy was the first Navy which protected American vessels abroad after your independence off the coast of Northern Africa. So you could argue that the situation in Northern Africa has not, the evolution could have been better in this after these 200 years. But also we are very close to those countries there. I mean, if you look at the map, at any map, you see that the closest capital city, if you fly from Lisbon, is not a European capital, Madrid, but Rabat in Morocco. So that means that the Middle East really is at our doorstep. And we try to promote ties with those countries, and I think that we have been successful in doing that. Of course, there are problems that we face together, the United States and Portugal. We face together problems like fighting against human trafficking, fighting against illegal drugs, fighting against terrorism, organized crime, but also protecting human rights from a global perspective and promoting global human rights. Portugal is in the process of getting support for becoming a member of the Human Rights Council in Geneva. And so we have been doing this also with the United States and our European partners. From a trade point of view, last year was a very good year for Portugal and for the United States, I believe, because our trade with the U.S. increased by about 24.7%, if I'm not wrong. And globally, our exports grew, and that's a good indicator about how our economy is reacting on a downturn, because we have a situation of negative growth, as you may are aware, during the year. So we have also big investments in the United States. I mean, as I said, the third largest wind power company in this country is Portuguese-owned. It is based in Houston, Texas. But my main interest has been to promote human contacts, I mean, to promote people-to-people contacts. And I have launched, together with the Portuguese Foundation, a program to have some kind of brain drain in reverse. Instead of having only the Portuguese coming to the United States, having some Americans going there. And we are doing that with, for instance, Dartmouth University in southern Massachusetts. But also we have very good programs, exchange programs, with the MIT, the Harvard Medical School, the Carnegie Mellon, and also Austin, Texas. Maybe one day we'll have a program with some university in this state as well. So to sum up, because I would like to take questions, I believe that we have a very sound bilateral relationship with the United States of America. We are a sound partner in the European Union. We are siding with you in so many fields. And we expect to see that growing, not diminishing. And as I said, we started the pivot to Asia centuries ago. Well, we can pivot together instead of going alone. Thank you.
So now, hello. So now, His Excellency will take questions. Just raise your hand. I'll come to you, give you the microphone, say a little bit about yourself, and speak clearly into the microphone.
And I will reply in Portuguese if I cannot address your questions.
I wish I could speak Portuguese, but I don't. My name is Elijah Colwell, and I'm a political science major and also major in international studies. Okay. I know Portugal is a unique country in Europe, but my question here is, what do you think you can achieve, like economically, politically, and scientifically with the United States in the next 5 years?
Well, that's a big question. As I said, we have to make sure that the programs that we have already in place, because the programs with those institutions that I've just referred to are programs that were established about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And so we have to make, for a program to grow, some 10 years are required at least. And so we have, my first priority was to ensure the sustainability under very difficult financial situation of those programs. And I'm happy to report that the programs are there in a somewhat reduced version, but still going and working properly. I'm also trying to promote, for instance, contacts. I went to Texas not a long time ago and to see if one of the largest research centers and cancer research centers, the Anderson Center, could be working with a brand new center, the Center for the Unknown, which was created in Lisbon by a foundation. So my job is to facilitate this kind of contacts more than to finance or create new links. Also, with the United States government, we have established a bilateral committee that meets every year to discuss scientific and technological issues. And one of the ideas is to have, for instance, a common statement, a political statement about what we want to achieve through this process. And maybe one day we'll have an agreement, although that will take longer in this process. So, in 5 years, I don't know where we'll be in 5 years, because it takes two to tango. It's also important that the U.S. institutions show an interest in cooperating with us. But I feel encouraged so far.
Thank you for the chance. My name is Alit. I'm a political science student here at EU. Thank you for your excellent presentations. I just have two simple questions here. My first question was, as members of European Union, I believe you are aware that the European Union today is still facing a great problem, like economic problem. So in terms of the relations between the United States and European Union, especially Portugal, what do you think that the United States here can help to kind of solve that kind of problem? And my second question is, in every relations, especially in political relations, I believe there's always a problem. What do you think is the biggest barriers between the relation between the United States and Portugal, and how do you think in the future that you would be able to resolve that kind of problem? Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Two very good questions. Well, I don't think that, starting by the last one, as I said, we don't have major the differences. I mean, we have some issues that are more difficult than others to deal with. For instance, on defense issues, I mean, we have a very, it's public that we are discussing the future presence of the U.S. forces in Portugal. And, I mean, this is an ongoing discussion, not because there is a movement against it, but because you, on your side, are scaling down your presence abroad. I mean, from a military point of view. And so how to make sure, and that is the political will of both parties, both the United States and Portugal, to increase the cooperation. So I would say that I've been paying also a lot of attention to defense issues, because we want to make sure that from this process, our relationship will be stronger, not less intense than it was. So if you are looking for particular problems, we could, I mean, on a nitty-gritty basis, we have some smaller problems, but they are not, they are, all of them are solvable. I mean, they are not that big. From a European perspective, what kind of help? I don't think that we are looking for help. I mean, I think the European Union is a very prosperous space altogether. We are interdependent. I mean, when we look at the United States, I think that, of course, the decisions that your policymakers take in Washington on the budget, on the debt, on other issues that are of common interest to all Americans are also decisions that will have an impact, a global impact, so to speak. And so we follow with keen interest also your political system. Likewise, the decisions that we take in Europe to strengthen the euro area, how fast we can move, which countries will stay. We hope that all of them will stay and that will grow in the end. These kind of decisions also will affect the United States of America. And so we try to act in a responsible way in this area as well. As you know, in the European Union, not all member states are members of the euro. There are member states which don't have the common currency. And so it's another problem, another layer, because how to interact to make sure that those countries don't feel left out. And I would say that on managing global affairs, if you look at the United States and Europe, take the case of Afghanistan, for instance. I mean, there is a strong U.S. presence there. But after the U.S., there is a strong European presence there, although it's not only European, it's more broader. So I believe that the future, there is more in the future to strengthen the relationship between the U.S. And Europe, and Portugal is going to be an important player in that field. Let me remind you that in the European Union, we are 28 members, as members are sitting on the board. And in foreign policy and defense, in most of the fiscal issues, the decisions are taken by unanimity. That means that Portugal has a vote which is equal as the vote of Germany or, for that matter, Sweden. So I keep reminding our American friends about this because you also have to lobby us. We love you, but you have to lobby us sometimes when we want to get something from Europe.
My name is Jordan Andruski. I'm a political science and international studies major. I'm also a business owner and operator. Our business is located in Salt Lake, but we've got locations all over the United States. And our production is based in Portugal. And I was just curious about what is being done in Portugal in terms of domestic policy to deal with unemployment issues there.
Well, very good question. And I would get the Nobel Prize for Economics this year if I could address that question. But I can tell you that we are doing a lot. I mean, there is a very lively debate in Portugal about what we are doing or not doing. But that's part of democracy, I mean. Because the fact is that we want to abolish this crisis. We don't want to abolish democracy. So that's, and I'm saying this because in the American newspapers lately, there was a reference to the possible weakening of the democratic links in Southern Europe as a result of this crisis. On the contrary, I feel that when we complete the process of economic restructuring that we need, the democratic regime will be even stronger than it was before. But having said that, which is a very general point, we have been. We feel that fiscal consolidation is part of growth. I mean, without fiscal consolidation, and we needed that, we couldn't grow because we wouldn't regain the confidence of the markets. And one of the top priorities for Portugal is to regain the confidence of the markets and to get off this troika mechanism that we have established on our own will. So, and there is one of the reasons why the program has been working reasonably well. I mean, the fact is that 80% of the measures included in the program have been taken. Has to do with the fact that the Portuguese parliament, the three main parties, have been very supportive of the program. The big discussion now, and of course we have to proceed also to banking the leverage, and that has been done, is being done as we speak, as a matter of fact. The biggest challenge is how we are going to restart growing. I mean, these are two legs, but there is a third one. And the third one is very important. It has to do with economic reform. And for that, we are doing simple things like cutting the red tape, for instance, which is preventing business to flourish. But also, we have to make sure that our judicial system works properly. I'm not implying that they don't work properly. I mean, they are very well trained. And what we want is to see them becoming more, to be faster in the way they operate. It's important for the business people, this point. And also, we have been reforming, for instance, the renting market in Portugal, housing renting, and reforming also some rents paid by to big corporations, especially in the energy sector. One of the big issues in this process is privatization. We have been privatizing some state-owned assets, some big corporations, and we have been doing that in a successful way. But there is one point, and you have a very good question. For these measures to be felt, time is needed. And time is something, and the markets don't cope very well with time. I mean, they are faster than governments usually to react. So it's a delicate balance because, on one hand, we have to make sure that the markets trust us, and we have been going to the markets lately with a considerable level of degree of success. But on the other hand, we need also to make sure that the measures that we are putting in place will be the beginning of something that will take some years to grow. On the unemployment issue, right, as I said, I mean, it's our top priority to bring it down. How can we bring it down? By promoting investment, private investment, and not only foreign investment, but also Portuguese investment, and so we are taking also some fiscal measures that are addressing this situation. But again, it's not going to be an overnight solution, a silver bullet. I mean, it's going to take some time.
So I would love to ask a question. Again, my name is Aria. I'm a business student, and I have a lot of emphasis in renewable energy. Portugal obviously is known in the world for one of the most advantageous for renewable energy. What are some direct steps Portugal can take to help countries like the United States invest more into renewable energy and countries in Europe as well to progress more into that field?
Well, some years ago, I mean, we followed the example of other European partners like Denmark. And if you look at our energy mix now, in the past, it was very strongly based on oil imports, too strongly, I mean, because we were completely dependent from these oil imports. So we have been trying to have a different energy mix. I mean, the renewables is part of the equation, but also we are importing, for instance, more gas, natural gas, and we are looking with keen interest of what you are doing in the United States in this field, because that will have an impact, I believe, in the global supply and demand of gas and in the prices, of course. We decided to use our natural resources. I mean, and what we have is our rivers, our seas, strong winds. Although I have to tell you that the strong winds are usually not felt in summertime. You can go there as tourists, and you'll be safe. And tourism is part of also what we want to do. And also promoting solar power, because we have a lot of solar exposure. In the United States, I mean, as I said, I mean, the third largest wind power company is Portuguese-owned, based in Texas. It's present in 11 states. I mean, they have farms, wind farms in 11 states. We also have another corporation, Martifer, investing heavily in solar power in California, I believe, and others linked with this cluster moving around in the United States. So there are also American corporations interested in what we are doing in Portugal. As a matter of fact, even in wind power, we are testing some project offshore, and that is being done with an American corporation. So we can share experiences, and I'm pretty sure that even for shale gas, I believe that there is Mojave looking for oil and gas in Portugal. They have been doing that for 20 years. They have been patient enough, and I hope that they will get some results at some point.
Do we have any more questions from students? Students? We have a question from a professor.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you for speaking to us. My question is about how we can promote tourism, greater tourism of Americans to Portugal. Unfortunately, about 1 out of 5, 20% of Americans have a passport. It always surprises me. And that I'm wondering what we can do to maybe have Portugal on the map within the minds of Americans for having Portugal as part of their tourist designation, so that there's a greater awareness of the Portuguese language, Portugal, the country, whether or not that's promoting advertising, television, what we can do to increase that as a goal.
Well, the first step, of course, is to get your passports in, because without them, it's more difficult. But you don't need visas to go to Portugal, so it's a visa-free. It's a no visa regime if you go there as tourists. It's also very close to the United States. I mean, especially to the eastern seaboard, because you can fly to Portugal daily, twice a day from New York, from Newark, New Jersey. I mean. Also, you can fly from Boston, from Philadelphia, from Miami. So it's nowadays you have several options. To reply to your very good question, I think that part of the problem lies with us, the Portuguese, because we have not been doing enough to promote Portugal in the United States as a market for you. Although I have to say that last year, we made an effort, and we had some very good coverage in some of the best American magazines and newspapers, and even on the television. There was an improvement, more than 200 articles and press clips linked with Portugal. So that we are trying to do something. And as a result, there was an increase of about 10% of the number of American tourists who went to Portugal last year. And they were responsible for an increase of 16% of the revenues of tourism in Portugal. So that means that American tourists spend more than other tourists per capita. So we are promoting Portugal. What can I tell you? I mean, with the possible exception of Utah, of course, it's the most amazing place on earth. So you have to go there. And I have a friend of mine who was telling me the other day, an American friend saying, well, going to the Disney World is a ritual. I've been to Disney World twice. I mean, once with my wife and the other with my wife and kids. But if you want to see the real thing, I mean, the real castles, well, you go to Portugal, because the fact is that the infrastructure, the transport infrastructure is very well developed, so you can move around very quickly in these days. It was not like that years ago. And also, it's a very secure country from a crime point of view, one of the most secure places probably in Europe. And it's very diverse. It's very diverse. My wife likes the word diverse. So I think that's, she's right, because it's a very diverse country. And if you look at ecotourism, for instance, you can even go to the Azores. The Azores in mid-Atlantic, they are amazing, I mean, as a tourist destination. So we'll have to do more. It's a very good question. We have to do more with the American operators. We have to persuade our people that there are many rewards in promoting better Portugal in the U.S. market.
One last question.
My name is Ryan Birmingham. I'm an international studies student. I noticed from your introduction that you were born in Angola.
Yes.
What do you see Portuguese and Angolan relationships going in the future? Where do you see those going?
Oh. Well, I don't think I need a lawyer to address that question, but no, as a matter of fact, it's very interesting if you look at, well, let's start by the beginning. Between 1961 and 1974, there were the three last colonial wars, probably, which took place in Africa, going on in Guinea-Bissau, Angola, and Mozambique. And, of course, I mean, these wars were painful for both sides. But if you look at the relationship that Portugal and those countries have with Portugal in these days, as I said, a very impressive relationship. I mean, for instance, we trade more with Angola nowadays than we trade with the United States. Of course, you can ask me what's wrong with your trade with the U.S., but the fact is that we trade more with them in volume than we trade with you. Or we trade more with them than we trade with China, for instance. Also, there are a number of Portuguese citizens, more than 100,000, living in Angola, and about 60,000 Angolans living in Portugal. Also, it's a two-way street. The Portuguese language has flourished there, and so there are many opportunities for business people in there. In the same way, we have been investing there, and they have been investing in Portugal also a lot. So, from time to time, we have difficult questions that we have to address, but we try to be helpful and candid, as friends should be. I believe that I'm surprised about how fast the relationship between the two countries evolved, because not only 40 years have passed since they have become independent.
Thank you. One more. We have time for one last question.
I'm sorry for everyone that doesn't speak Portuguese, but I'm going to ask my question in Portuguese. O senhor mencionou algo sobre o tráfico de humanos. E eu já ouvi falar algo sobre o assunto. E eu acho que como americanos, nós não sentimos o peso real desse assunto. E esse assunto nunca passa nos jornais aqui nos Estados Unidos. E nunca ouvimos falar desse assunto sobre o Portugal e na Europa também. Eu queria saber o que é o peso desse problema no Portugal e quais são algumas coisas que o Portugal está fazendo para consertar esse problema?
Thank you. Human trafficking is, I believe, the slavery of the 21st century. I mean, it's a very serious problem. Because with the open borders, I mean, globally speaking, and there are more advantages for everybody than before. But also, there are opportunities for organized crime to operate, and so we have seen that in Europe is not immune as a whole to this problem. I mean, we have this problem within Europe, in the relationship of Europe with other parts of the world, but also in other places. Even in the United States, there is a report every year published about human trafficking, not only here but in other countries as well. So we try to be very practical, to identify problems. I don't say that we have a problem as such, I mean, if compared with other countries, but we try to act responsibly in cooperating with others to see if we can bring this issue to lower the levels of the incidence of this issue in Europe and in other places as well. it's a rather serious problem because it affects, for instance, labor relations. I mean, if people are taken from one place to the other illegally, they can be exploited, I mean, in their working places. And so that's something that we have to take seriously. And also some sex crimes, for instance, are also one way linked with this phenomena. And so there are many fields in which we can feel the impact of this illegal trafficking of human beings in these days. So as I said, it's something that we take seriously, and we hope that we'll take this issue as seriously as we are taking it. And thank you for speaking in Portuguese, by the way. Where are you from?
I'm from Utah.
Okay. But you speak very well.
All right. Can everybody please join me in thanking His Excellency Nuno Brito for an excellent and informative forum?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.